all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone with VeteransRadio.net. We are recording today from the Legal Help for Veterans studio in Northville, Michigan. Legal Help for Veterans is a veterans disability law firm. You can reach us at 800-693-4800. We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today Army veteran Justin Nichols. Justin, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you, Jim. It's good to be on the show, man.
Well, we're really glad to have you on. We've known each other for years, actually. But this is the first time we've been able to do a formal interview and talk about your military service and something that you're pretty passionate about, which is veteran health care and cannabis. So we're looking forward to that conversation. But let's start with this. You did about 10 years in the Army in various units and in situations. Tell us about your military career.
I guess you want me to start right off at the get-go. I was up in North Carolina on September 11th just visiting my mom, and had kind of been dabbling with a recruiter, and that happened. And I have a long lineage of people in my family that have served, so I felt like it was kind of my calling to go at that point. That was kind of my sign. Stationed with 1st Infantry Division in Bamberg, Germany. Had a deployment from 04 to 05, Bakke Bae, Iraq, with Charlie Battery 1-6. It was kind of an interesting experience because I went as an artilleryman, and I felt like I came out as an infantryman. I would say I probably split my time from being in a gun piece to working on the ground. We were fortunate enough to be attached to 2-2 Infantry out of Schweinfurt, Germany, and I was selected to be our designated marksman, one of two guys. So, I mean, my mission kind of radically changed, but, you have your ups and downs during your deployments, and, you experience different things, but I would say overall, a really good, experience as far as feeling some accomplishment coming out of that. And at that time, I'd been doing very well in the military and had been approached to, either go OCS or do something else, within the military. And my dad and my uncle, two guys that I look up to a lot, said, if you're going to get your education, get it now. It's only going to get harder as you go on. So I came back and actually signed up with the Army Reserves, served with them until about 2007, then went into the National Guard. So I kind of made my run of all the options that at least the Army had to provide. And then, just kind of ended my career after that. It was kind of enough for me at that point. But, it was interesting being able to see, how all different aspects of the Army works as far as, active duty to your guard and reserve components.
Well, it gives you a unique perspective, certainly. And I think most citizens of this country can't tell the difference between any of those, components and the way we train and fight these days, it's more and more important that the enemy can't tell the difference between an active duty unit and a National Guard unit, for example.
Yeah, I think also one of those things of kind of understanding that, the National Guard is state run, and then your Army Reserves and, your active duty are federally run. So, just little differences like that. However, I met a lot of, really good people, throughout that whole experience, and, a good bit of them that I still stay in touch with today.
You mentioned that part of the driver to get out was the realization that, hey, it's time to go get some higher education. Did you have the opportunity to do that?
I did. I got out, I'm the first one on, my dad's side of the family, really, even my mom's side, that has a college degree. And oddly enough, I went to military school during high school, not because it was a choice.
I was going to say, that may have been for a different reason, right?
Yeah, it was definitely for a different reason. It was more or less because I was a little wild as a young man. I remember distinctly when I graduated, I was like, I'm never doing anything military again. And here I am. You know, I found myself, you know, doing it again. But, you know, my parents invested a lot of money into my education. It was a college prep military school, and I knew it was important to them. And I felt like, you know, I kind of owed it to them to put that time in and do that. And, I mean, obviously in the end it benefited me immensely, but that whole transition was a little weird.
As you moved from being a soldier into being a student, you went on to Eastern Michigan University. Tell us about sort of how that transition worked for you.
Well, I initially started out at Washtenaw Community College because, you know, I realized I'd kind of been out of that classroom environment for so long. I didn't want to bum rush right into a university. I wanted to make sure that, you know, I got my feet up underneath me. So I started out there getting, I hadn't picked out my associate's degree or anything like that. I was just doing mostly my gen eds, but I wanted to go for a business management degree. I thought that's what I was supposed to do. You know, my dad owned a company. My uncle owned a couple of businesses. I figured, well, this is what I'm supposed to do, opposed to really looking at it and saying, well, what do I want to do? You know, what is it that drives me? And I think that's hard for, you know, any 20-year-old person. You know, I found very few and far between those who really know what they want to do. And I remember being in there my first semester. I got good grades, was doing all that. But, and I know this is, you know, I'm polished enough, but I'm still a little rough around the edges. The best way to describe it is I wanted to throw a punch, you know, probably 90% of the kids that were in my class, because I didn't understand that, you know, I could participate in the class, and I'm listening to all these very, you know, isolated experiences, you know, kids that have never been on their own. They had never, you know, been outside their hometown or even been out of their state. And I had traveled much of the world, you know, even being stationed in Germany, and obviously some pretty extreme life experiences. And, you know, I was probably having my worst time during that first semester because I was like, I didn't feel like I was standing out. And, you know, I always prided myself in that, you know, just within my unit of, you know, being at the top and wanting to compete with the, you know, the guys that were really out there doing something for the unit and learning. And it wasn't until I sat down and my uncle had, you know, sat me aside. You know, my immediate family was down in Georgia. He sat me down. He goes, you know, your cousin tells me you're having a hard time. And I was like, well, I'm not having a hard time in school. It's just, you know, it's hard for me to sit here and listen to all this. You know, I don't even feel like I want to learn this stuff. You know, I don't even know if this is for me. You know, maybe I should just, you know, go back in. And really what I was doing is I was going back to what was comfortable. And, you know, he said something to me. He said, you know, college isn't, you know, necessarily trying to figure out what you're going to do for the rest of your life. You know, at the very base of it, you know, it's writing your ticket into, you know, a job. It's showing an employer that you can commit to something for 4 years. Finish it, you know, do it, you know, so on and so forth. You can continue your education after that. He said that's really what master's degrees and things like that are meant for. And that really kind of, you know, resonated with me because, and my immediate response was, I said, well, I've already committed to something, you know, I've already served, you know, I've shown that. And he goes, yeah, this is something different. Most people aren't going to understand that. He said, you know, so my immediate thing, just because, you know, I'm still a young dude and wanting to figure that out, I said, well, what'd you get your degree in? He goes, I got a degree in history, you know, and he's a very successful businessman. And he goes, well, what do you love? And I go, actually, I love history. And I ended up, changing out of that and really enjoying the rest of my time, in college. And I mean, I have a history degree, and I've done nonprofit. I've done, you know, financial services. I've done everything other than apply, you know, what you would, I guess, generally apply a history degree to.
Well, I think it's one of the pearls of wisdom you're passing along to maybe some of the men and women who follow you in this pathway, which is you're not making a lifetime commitment here. You're sort of punching that training ticket so you can go on and continue to follow your passions. And it's not unusual for people to come out and many people say it's years. It's not a 6 months or a year. It could be multiple years where you're still just moving from a very structured environment to a very wide open environment and trying to get yourself comfortable with it. Did you find that not only in the classroom but elsewhere you had to deal with some health-related issues because of the service and were somewhat resistant in doing that?
I don't know. I kind of felt like, you know, my body was in pretty good condition, you know, but, you know, I come out of combat arms. So a lot of that environment, you know, you have a lot of different personalities, but really what it's geared to, and I mean, this is applicable across the military, you know, in this day and age, just because you're sitting in a finance position doesn't mean you can't find yourself in a stressful, you know, position that might expose you to something that you're not ready to see, you know, or might not have a long-term effect. But for me, it was, you know, I think that's, I'm trying to remember if it was off that movie, I think it's like Talladega Nights. He brings up something. It's like, you know, they're sitting there talking. He goes, you know, I'd appreciate it if you just go ahead and bury that deep down inside, never bring it up again. That was
your philosophy?
That was kind of what I'd been doing. You know, I grew up in a tough family, you know, a loving family, but it was tough. It was about getting things done. And, you know, I think the hardest part for me was right off the bat was really realizing that I had such a very unique experience just by being in the military that people were just not going to relate to. And, you know, call it age, call it wisdom, call it experience, whatever it is. You know, probably one of the things that frustrates me most about today is that, you know, with free speech and all these things that are going on, it almost seems like if you have an opinion, you ask someone what theirs is, and if that doesn't agree, then they're wrong, you know, or, you know, it's not validated. And probably when I was, you know, younger during that time, just getting going, is that I didn't even want to talk to anybody because I'm like, well, how are you going to understand? How are you even going to be able to fathom my perspective on life and my understanding of life? Because I've seen it in very raw forms. You know, you're reading, you're telling me something that you've either heard on the TV or read out of a book. This is something that I've lived. You know, so how am I going to relate to a 19-year-old, a 22-year-old, or, you know, anybody who was back home that didn't have that experience, but I was also, you know, through that, I was isolating myself. And, you know, later on, in 2015, it all kind of came to a head for me. You know, it's, you can only run from that stuff for so long before it comes up. So, you know, if I could, I have no regrets, but if I could, you know, go back and talk to the younger version of myself, I probably would have said, you know what, you don't have to go out to, you know, a therapist or these other people and have diarrhea of the mouth and tell them everything that happened, but you can at least start talking about some of these things and finding out how you can relate, because you do have things that people want to hear. You do have experiences that are valuable. And just getting some of that off, like off your back, your chest, whatever you want to call it, you know, it is a very relieving experience. But I think, you know, the misconception for a lot is like, well, look, I don't want to go into this hold hands, let's hug, tell me about your feelings type environment and do that. You know, and it also makes you feel like, you know, in the military, when you're doing stuff like that, it makes you feel weak.
Oh, yeah.
If you're not holding up your end.
Right, that's the culture.
Yeah.
And I think you commented from the movie, you know, bury that deep and never bring it up again is one extreme. Diarrhea at the mouth is probably the other extreme you've mentioned. And somewhere in the middle is you ought to talk about this. Talk about what you want to talk about. Have valid opinions, and that'll help get some of that weight off your back. Did you find the VA helpful in that regards or not helpful in that regards?
At that time, I didn't. I really didn't. It almost felt like I was getting processed through MEPS again. You know, it was like, stand here, go here, do this. And it felt like I couldn't be honest. You know, I felt like I had to tell them what they wanted to hear. You know, they weren't hearing why I was doing certain things. Like, the immediate response was, well, you need substance abuse counseling, or you need this therapy, or you need this. You don't, you know, you should do that. Everybody's telling me what I need to do with my life, yet how do you know what I need to do with my life? This is my first time meeting you. You know, even if I sat here all day, you still wouldn't understand. And I thought that was very ignorant of, and I won't say his name, but I know this doctor is still at the Ann Arbor VA. And I've had other vets that have walked through that office. I think he's a complete nightmare because of this reason. But just wants to diagnose you and get you off. Like,
and
you're just another check mark.
Yeah, and I think that's you led right where I was wondering if I could ask you this question, which is, and we're talking to Justin Nichols, who's an Army veteran, did some time in Iraq, Germany, spent about 10 years in service. Justin, did you feel like they felt compelled to give you a label, and did you feel that was a label you owned?
I don't know if they felt compelled to give me the label. I just think it's like a conditioned response from, you know, a lot of those people in that position to just, you know, get you through it. You know, I think for one, they're extremely undermanned and outdated. Just as a whole for an organization, given the type of injuries, you know, I think when you look at it, you know, you look at our last major conflict, you had Vietnam, and, you know, there was tons of, you know, booby traps and things that would maim and injure people. And obviously you had the psychological effects and things like that, and Agent Orange, but you also had a lot of deaths. And it's not to say, well, one war is more important, you know, based off of, you know, the amount of killed in action that you have, but I think during this you have a way, like, you just have a higher number of those type of injuries opposed to death. And even if you're not the one necessarily dealing with that injury, and you witness that, and you see a friend named, or you see, you know, someone that you care for hurt in that manner, and you can't get the retribution, you can't make, you know, an understanding out of it, that you have way more psychological effects that are coming through there, and I don't think they have enough doctors on hand that can actually walk through it, you know what I mean? Can actually sit down and have that experience with you, saying, hey, let's just start with the general stuff.
So before,
like, ease into it. It would be like me walking up to you, Jim, and being like, hey, you're Jim. Oh, I'm Justin. Both our names start with J. You know what? I'm going to be your best friend right now, and when we talk, I'm going to tell you everything that you need to know about your life that you didn't understand. You look at me like I'm crazy. And I think that's why a lot of vets walk out of there going, these guys are effing nuts. Like, I don't ever want to go back there.
Well,
you're going to label me.
Yeah, it's certainly, you know, all too common that we hear about guys who get, hey, I don't know that I've got PTSD, but that's what they say my label is, or TBI, or some other version of it, and here's the treatment path I go down, because that's the treatment path everybody has to go down with that label. But what I wanted to turn to, Justin, is through this process, you have found that there is, and we're in the state of Michigan, which has legal medical marijuana, and cannabis, and you've been able to find some value in turning in that direction, and we know VA doesn't turn in that direction. Can you walk us through that path a little bit?
Well, hopefully, you know, they will. I did see that, you know, the Senate did introduce a bill that passed almost unopposed, to introduce a bill that will allow, I believe, I'm trying to remember the levels of legalization for medical marijuana use for vets, which I think is phenomenal. But I'll be real transparent as a young man, you know, I dabble with marijuana, and my sole purpose was because it made me laugh. I thought it was funny. It was kind of something that I didn't fully understand. You know, as I got older, you know, especially I guess the, you know, sometimes with some of these, you know, forms, whether it's alcohol, whether it's prescription drugs, I didn't like the feeling of being out of control, you know, because I'd been in a controlled environment, and learning how to kind of control what you're doing became very important. It wasn't until I had an experience in 2015 where I literally had gotten so drunk, I woke up on the train tracks and had no idea how I got there. And I didn't realize how bad, you know, my drinking had become. And I was drinking literally just to go to sleep. My anxiety levels were through the roof. you know, I couldn't get to sleep. You know, my body didn't feel right. And I was just essentially doing that, not to even dull my sense, or, well, I guess, yeah, dull my senses would probably be it. But I guess not to, like, you know, doing it so I wouldn't remember something. But it was more or less, I was like, I don't know what else to do. I mean, I'd go spend 3 hours in the gym, and I'm still, you know, up till 2-3 o'clock in the morning, getting up at 6 and 7. You know, I'm just not even giving my body enough time to recharge. And during that time, you know, I luckily somehow I ended up back in my apartment, and I immediately called my cousin, and she was like a GS-14 for the VA down in Memphis. And I told her what was going on. I was like, man, I need help. I need at least a start point. She flew up and kind of got me into that, and I had my experience through the VA, which, you know, I will say this, it gave me the break that I probably needed, but the therapies and the services weren't there for me. Because I experienced the same thing. They just wanted to throw me back into classes and really at things that are inconvenient for someone who's, you know, probably working or trying to do something with their life. Wasn't meshing real well. Luckily at that time, a good friend of mine, Derek Carver, he's a lieutenant with 82nd Airborne. He had lost his left leg in Afghanistan, standing right on top of an IED, and you know, I stayed in touch with him and kind of knew what he was going through, and he'd come back, and I just was like, hey, man, you want to go out and grab something to eat? And he started telling me about his path on cannabis and how he was getting himself off of prescription drugs and all these things. And I was like, are you serious? Because I had never used it in that capacity. I didn't understand it to be what it was. And really, honestly, what I found out was that it was just a lot of educating myself, getting with like-minded individuals and learning more about it. But, I mean, this is a guy who last year was the world's strongest adaptive athlete, you know, and he's using this, you know, as a form of therapy. Ever since then, I've been on a cannabis regimen. My drinking is probably, you know, non-existent other than being social. My production level, you know, is way up. I feel better about my body. Like, I don't feel, you know, sluggish, but I also use, like, different strains, different methods to ingest for what it is that I'm experiencing. I use it like I would use any other medicine. If I need it, I use it. You know, and I'm definitely not walking around, you know, bombed out, you know, all the time. And it's like kind of, common misconception is that the strongest, you know, cannabis is the best. And I mean, even the ones that really work for me are not the strongest. They have a mix of, you know, THC and CBD or CBG and, you know, other things that can help your body that kind of keep you level. But I've learned that through education and getting around, you know, other like-minded individuals that, I mean, that's probably one of the main reasons that I've stayed in Michigan opposed to moving back down to Georgia.
And we're talking to Justin Nichols, who's an Army veteran, who through a series of sort of self-educated steps has found that medical marijuana and cannabis and CBG oil are helpful for him to you know, deal with some of the anxiety and stresses that came out of service. Justin, I guess I'm wondering as we come to a close here, you know, the research tells us, VA did a survey and over a million veterans reported that they use cannabis for medical purposes to deal with some of their issues. It's probably a higher number. That's just a self-reported number. And yeah. And VA hasn't quite been able to get there. They've got a couple of small studies going on about the impact of it. But what's your hope for how VA will proceed over the next few years relative to making cannabis and veterans' health issues a little closer together?
Well, I hope they just don't take the federal approach to it. You know, they, which I've typically found out is, we don't understand it, so we're not going to allow it. You know, you have a lot of amazing minds. Like, my caregiver is a veteran. You know, he's a retired chief warrant officer. You know, he's been able to educate me on things and vice versa. But there's a lot of knowledge that they could bring in and say, well, how are you doing this? You know, supporting research programs, you know, putting those together. I know I belong to a veterans group, Odin's Outcast, based out of Howe. Josh Barrett heads it up. He's a phenomenal vet, Marine Corps veteran. But there's plenty of guys in our group that would volunteer for something like that. You know, they would say, this is how I medicate. This is what it does for me. This is what it allows me to do. And understand the difference that just because one person grows it here and one person grows it over there doesn't necessarily mean that they're growing it the right way. You know, they could be using pesticides and chemicals and other things that can boost it to make it look good, but that's not stuff that you want to put in your body. And especially if you have, you know, physical limitations, you don't want to give your body another thing to try to overcome, especially if you don't know if it's in there. The main thing that I would say is literally for the VA and for any veteran that's out there that's curious, you know, saying, you know, well, maybe this could be something for me, is educate yourself. You know, there's plenty of veterans out there. There's plenty of people out there. Even if you walk into a dispensary and you say, hey, I'm kind of new at this, I'd like to learn about it, there's people that will help you with it. And I think through that, instead of just kind of bum rushing into it and saying, you know what, I'm going to, instead of just wiping everything off the table, I'm going to start substituting this for this.
Well, I think that's the, we'll bring it to the end here, because Justin, I think you just gave that last pearl of wisdom, which is there are a lot of veterans groups. There's a lot of people, veterans who are caregivers and users of cannabis, who would be more than willing to help if you have questions. Search those folks out. And as you said, educate yourself. That's really the answer before you go down this road.
Yeah, I would even say, just for vets, if you're here in Michigan and you're looking for, you know, I know because I've vetted out some of these organizations, and they've been pretty involved in, you know, veteran activities behind the scenes, because they're not looking for the notoriety, they just want to help. But if you're looking and you want to reach out, I could say a couple of different products that are really good are the Godflower. Days Concentrates is very good, very clean. You can reach out to them and talk to them and say, hey, I'm a veteran. I heard this on the radio. I was looking for a little information. They will reach back out to you. You know, they want to see you get what you need. But I would also say for any vet is get out there and network. I know it's hard, you know, sometimes because you want to wall yourself in, but you'll tend to find out that if you give yourself more targets as far as like running into people, you know, you can narrow down, you know, who you want to interact with and who you don't. But you also over time will find out who's truly there because they care about you or they want to be involved or they want to help. And your experiences with other people, if you are a little walled in, won't be so negative or disappointing.
Well, we want to thank you, Justin Nichols, for coming on Veterans Radio today to give your insights into this road that you've been on. And obviously, thank you for your service to the country. And really appreciate the extra effort of being so honest here and telling folks how you got there and that there's light at the other end as well.
No, I appreciate you having me on, and if there's ever an opportunity to get on here and help out, I'd be more than willing to. And if there's any vets that, you know, want to call into your news station and say, look, I don't maybe want to do that, could I get in touch with Justin? I will leave my email, my personal number with you, and if they call in, you know, if you're out there, don't hesitate to reach out to me. I'll do whatever I can to, you know, put you in contact with who you need to be in contact with or help you out.
And I want to thank everybody for listening to Veterans Radio today. I am Jim Fossone. It's been a pleasure to be your host. I'm a veterans disability lawyer at Legal Help for Veterans, and you can reach us at 800-693-4800 or legalhelpforveterans.com on the web. You can follow Veterans Radio on Facebook and listen to its podcasts and internet radio shows by going to veteransradio.net. And until next time, you are dismissed.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.